It is your Wednesday daily delivery. I am Michael Rand. Hope you guys are having a good one out there today. And I guess I should say it's part one of your Wednesday daily delivery. Another special episode, part two of your Wednesday, coming up a little bit later today. Probably sound like early afternoon. I'm going to publish post twin season preview, kind of a standalone show just on the Twins, getting you ready for the start of the season, start of the year. Tomorrow, Twins open the year in Kansas City, then a series in Milwaukee before they open their home schedule next week. So yeah, we'll do that. Bobby Nightingale will join me for that one. And you'll hear from Royce Lewis and Carlos Correa too, courtesy of Bobby. So we'll play that here later, a few hours from now, like I said. So look for that. After you listen to this one, before you listen to this one, however, whatever order you prefer to do it in, it's kind of a part one and a part two to today's daily delivery. Just so much going on, and I wanted to have a special standalone episode for the Twins, and that one's, you know, probably listenable for quite a while since the season is 162 games, and a lot of the previewing will hold up for a while. Today's show, the regular show, part one, Chris Hine will join me in a little bit to talk Timberwolves. 11 games left in their season, kind of down the stretch here, see what kind of seed they're going to get. Chris and I also talked quite a bit about how they've adapted their offense in particular to life without Carl Anthony Towns, kind of did a little guesswork at when he might come back from his injury, if he is able to come back this year, kind of what the timetable looks like, how that all lines up, and much more with Chris. So that'll be here in just a few minutes. Got some Gophers women's basketball at the end of the show. First, though, what did I miss? A couple NFL/Vikings things I want to get to right off the jump here. We'll talk more NFL Vikings with Ben Gessling on Thursday's show. He was at the owners' meetings in Orlando. Some interesting stuff learned from Kevin O'Connell and the Vikings brass there. So Ben will join me on Thursday's show to talk about a lot of those things, including the process the Vikings will go through in picking their quarterback and just how much they are including Justin Jefferson in that process. Right now, though, two things. One, kicker Greg Joseph signs with the Packers. Vikings kicker for the last 3 years. A decent enough kicker, right? Like he made some clutch kicks, especially in 2022. You know, he's never missed more than, you know, a handful of field goals every year. Missed 5 in his first year, 7 in 2022, 6 last year. But not a great kicker, right? Like if you look at the averages in the NFL, he's below average in terms of field goal accuracy. He's below average in terms of makes from, you know, 40 plus, especially 50 plus. These last couple of years, he's made 8 out of 17 from 50 plus yards. He missed 6 extra points a couple of years ago. So he's missed 12 extra points over the last 3 years that he's been kicking for the Vikings. So you looked at it and you said, okay, is this a spot where you want to try to upgrade? Kicking is tricky, right? Because I've talked on this show plenty of times. I've talked to Ryan Longwell, the former Vikings kicker, who's been great at breaking this down as to why it's so important to have consistency in the kicking game, consistency in the operation. Same snapper, same holder, same kicker. Now, the Vikings haven't had the same holder the whole time Joseph's been here. They brought in Ryan Wright a couple years ago as the punter slash holder. But, you know, overall, the consistency in the kicking game, the most important thing, and obviously the kicker, the most important part of that operation. Yes, I get you can't have a kick without a snap and a hold, but the final product, the kick, is the thing that we remember generally at the end of the day. So changing up here, potentially changing up here, Joseph signing with the Packers, assuming he goes there and wins the job, he's got to beat out another Carlson, Anders Carlson, over in Green Bay. Assuming he wins the job there and is the Green Bay kicker next year, the Vikings will be searching for a replacement moving on after 3 years of having Joseph being their kicker. So changing the operation, when is it good to go away from the known, go away from what's consistent to seek out something else? I think now is the time. I was at the, with this particular move, I was at the kind of point where every time Joseph came on the field, I no longer thought he was going to make it. fair or not, I didn't have that feeling when he stepped out on the field, even though he made 80% of his field goals last year, which would suggest that he made the vast majority of his kicks. 4 out of every 5 times he came on the field, he made the field goal. He missed 2 extra points last year, which is fine. That's about league average. He came out on the field and more often than not did his job. I still just didn't feel like that was going to happen. He's missed enough kicks. Enough kicks have been, you know, questionable, close, even if they went in. I never had a great feeling in these last like year and a half when he stepped on the field. There's just been enough missed kicks, enough inconsistency, enough of the ball drifting to the right. I think when he missed, it was often to the right. So time to move on. That's dangerous, right? Like, he's the commodity, you know. He's what you know. He's, you know, below league average in a lot of ways, so it makes it easy to think, okay, just make this change. But we have also seen with the Vikings what can happen when you don't have a known commodity at kicker. It can get worse than this. You can do a lot worse than Greg Joseph. This is about trying to get better from something that's a little bit below average. And like I said, he did make a lot of clutch kicks, but I think this was the right move, depending on how they can now fill this role. But, you know, kickers are so good these days. I don't think they should be too worried about finding someone who can at least be Greg Joseph caliber. And hopefully they can find a kicker who's even better than that. So an interesting move. They were 30th in special teams DVOA last season, 3rd from the bottom in the NFL. Trying to improve on that. Some of that's the kicking game, right? Like, some of it's returns, stuff like that, coverage teams, things like that. But the kicking game, they got to get better in the kicking game. It's a way to steal field position, especially now with these new kickoff rules. The kickoffs are going to be even more important, placing the ball places instead of just booming it through the end zone. So an interesting time to be a Vikings kicker, and it probably looks like it will not be Greg Joseph as he is signed with the Packers. Really quick, more mock draft steam for Vikings fans to consider. Matt Miller, NFL draft analyst for ESPN, has a new mock draft out and has the Vikings moving all the way up to number 3 with New England trading their 2 picks this year in the first round and a 2025 first rounder to move up to number 3 to take Drake May. That seems to be a pretty popular move for the Vikings right now to get Drake May. Again, my question is, does New England really want to do that? I'm curious to see if that plays out like that, but another option, another opinion that says that's what the Vikings are going to do. Now, interesting one the other day at ESPN, Mike Tannenbaum from ESPN did a mock draft where he's like, this is what I would do if I was running the board. He has Arizona taking J.J. McCarthy at number 4, kind of wiping the Vikings out of their top 4 choices at quarterback. No trade up for the Vikings to number 3. He instead has the Vikings trading number 11 to the Cardinals for Kyler Murray and a 3rd-round pick. I don't think this is going to happen. I don't like necessarily that this would happen. I feel like you're just kind of like back in that same salary cap territory instead of resetting. This doesn't seem like at all what their plan is, but that caught my eye on Tuesday as well, so I thought I would share that with you all. I don't think that's a realistic proposition. I don't even think Tannenbaum thinks that's a realistic proposition. It's just something he would do if the board played out the way he has the board playing out.
MGM Wine and Spirits is the choice for savings, service, and a great selection of spirits, pre-mixed cocktails, wines, and of course, ice-cold beers and hard seltzers. With over 30 locations throughout the Twin Cities and beyond, there's an MGM near you. Head to mgmwineandspirits.com to find a convenient location in your area. Get social. Follow MGM on Facebook and Instagram for all the latest news and trends. Make great moments with MGM Wine and Spirits, your locally owned and operated choice for over 50 years. Save time, save money. Shop MGM.
Let's talk Timberwolves on Daily Delivery today. Chris Hine is my guess. So we got 11 games left in the regular season. Chris, Wolves have been playing, you know, the last, 9, 10 games without Karl Anthony Towns. Some interesting stuff. The seeding is getting kind of interesting, so I wanted to engage you on a lot of that stuff. But first off, how are you doing, and how was the Carole King musical?
Oh, loved it. Loved it. Everybody needs to get some tickets and go to the Chan Hassan Dinner Theater and get yourselves educated on the life of the greatest songwriter in rock and roll history, Carole King.
Greatest songwriter in rock and roll
They do a
history.
phenomenal job with that show.
Excellent. Well, I'm glad to hear it. I'm glad it lived up to your hopes and dreams and expectations. We know what a big Carole King fan you are. One of the best episodes of this is the now defunct Timberwolves podcast we used to do was when we ascribed Carole we gave Carole King songs to various Wolves players.
We did, yeah. That was no wonder why we shuttled that podcast. Yeah,
That was a very
it's no
popular
longer in
segment. It was
existence.
just
Yeah.
it was we rolled all of our Timberwolves content into daily delivery, and for good reason. It's a
That's right. That's
we
right.
did that, and now
Consolidation.
yes,
Consolidation.
consolidation.
We don't want you
Yes,
listening to nine different podcasts. We want
no,
you
it's
listening to like
just
two
one
or
place,
three.
just one place.
Yeah.
Just download
Yeah.
them all in one place. It's fine.
That's right.
So interesting to me. You wrote about this the other day, but like how the Wolves have been forced to, but also adapted to playing without Karl-Anthony Towns, and then for a few times. No Rudy Gobert in there, and a couple of those times, no Naz Reid. Like having to, or Naz Reid, having to be like, change your identity on the fly, and it's not usually to that extreme. Now Naz and Rudy are back, but what do you see as the differences in how they're playing without Karl-Anthony Towns?
Well, the main difference is they're taking more threes, as I wrote about the other day. The floor is a little more open, a little more spread out. Guys are spotting up, shooting, and they're pulling the trigger at a higher rate. A lot of players are, like Naz Reid, like Mike Conley. And of late, we've seen Jaden McDaniels kind of get out of his offensive slump the last couple of games here. I thought he had a really some really important makes in that Golden State game on Sunday night. So yeah, there's I think they recognize that they ought to play a little differently, and this is just the product of it. They're getting out a little more in transition, and transition can lead to more 3-point opportunities as well, as the defense is scrambling to get back. And yeah, I think it's looked better. On what's interesting is their offense isn't that much more efficient when I looked it up, pre-Carl injury and post-Carl injury. Before Carl's injury, they were 18th in efficiency. Afterwards, these 9 games here or so, they were 16th. So it's not like they're, burning up the charts of the offensive efficiency rating since Carl's been out. And I think that speaks to, just how important Carl is and how efficient of a player he, in particular, is as well. It's just a different style. It's just a different way of getting to where they are, which is a middle of the pack. It has been middle of the pack offensive team pretty much all season.
Interesting that,
So,
oh, go ahead. Sorry.
oh,
Keep going.
no, go ahead. Go ahead.
I was going to say, interesting that they're shooting more threes without a guy who is one of their best 3-point shooters.
That's kind of the ironic part about this. A commenter called me out for not using the word ironic in my story the other day. I see you, commenter.
It wasn't me.
It wasn't you, right? That is kind of the funny thing about this is, Carl was their second highest volume 3-point shooter behind Anthony Edwards when he went out. So now like I said, we've just seen guys be willing to shoot a little more, and when they have an open shot, they're taking it. Nikhil Alexander-Walker, Naz Reid, Mike Conley, Jaden McDaniels, Jordan McLaughlin, who was their best 3-point shooter by percentage on the team this season, in a very good development for them and for J-Mac's career. So I think it's come at a right time. And that's the one thing about the NBA is, and I think Chris Finch has alluded to this in the past, but you never really have to convince guys to want to shoot more or take more shots. That's
No.
something that guys are going to be willing to do.
Yes.
It's just, can they do it at a efficient rate? And I think so far the Wolves are at least keeping their heads above water here, with this stretch without Towns, because they're winning games. They're 6-3 without him, which is a better clip than they were playing without him a year ago. And I think expecting after Wednesday when they play the Pistons, that should improve to 7-3 if not something went really, really wrong on Wednesday night.
Yeah, and it's you talk about no guys are going to be turning down shots. I was worried a little bit initially because it seemed like Anthony Edwards was going to take all of his shots, all of Carl's shots, maybe all of Jaden's shots, everybody else's shots during this time when he's out, and just gobble them up for himself because it seemed like he was trying to do a, maybe trying to put everybody on his back initially, and it was working to a certain degree. That game, and you know, that game where he had the game clinching block against Indiana, I believe that was the first game without Towns. He had some other monster games in there, but lately you seem to hear a lot of his teammates talking about Ant's just making the right play every time. He's still scoring, but he doesn't have to be high volume, high shooting. Like they're getting the ball around to a bunch of different people who are taking the shots, not just Ant. What have you seen in his growth since, you know, in this stretch? He's already been on a growth trajectory, but what's been different for him in this past nine games?
Well, I think you just know that going into a given night without Carl there, Anthony Edwards is going to be the guy that an opposing team really hones in on. And everything they do defensively is going to be to try to limit him. So he doesn't really have a partner in crime, so to speak, with Carl out there to take some of that attention away, to be able to just kind of take possessions off or whatever. That Wolves need Anthony Edwards involved almost all the time that he's on the floor in an offensive possession. And Ant recognizes that he can't be shooting the ball every time. And he's always been a big supporter of his teammates, always likes to fire up his teammates. It's one of the really good qualities about him, and what this team loves about him is that he is a great teammate. And so he's not afraid to, you know, in a tight situation, deliver a pass to Jaden McDaniels for a corner three with 3 minutes left in a close game against Golden State. You know, he's willing to make those kind of plays. What he fights sometimes is when, you know, teams do double him. You don't know that his court vision is always there, that he sees what's open or sees where the play is. Because if he can see it, I think he will make it, you know, most of the time. It's just a matter of trying to see the floor, recognize the coverages, and making the right play as a result of that. So I think he's done a good job of not taking on too much of a shooting load here since Cat went out. And I think he has done a good job of kind of spreading the ball around and trying to get some of these guys open looks, and it's paid off, especially, you know, in games, you know, like the, you know, like that Clippers win that they had, you know, some of the games in Utah, you know, some really good performances from him, not just scoring, but setting guys up as well.
Towns injured, it was a few weeks ago. It was 2 weeks ago, Tuesday, that they announced the surgery. The timetable at that point was reevaluate in 4 weeks. So that takes us out to April 9th. There's still a little bit of the regular season after that. And then they wouldn't, you know, they're not in the play-in this year. So they got, what, four games left counting April 9th. And then you got the play-in, you got playoffs after that. Putting on your kind of amateur, you know, you're not going to diagnose this or how he is, but, you know, this is a fairly common injury. It's not probably someone, you know, a meniscus is probably going to heal at a pretty consistent rate as opposed to maybe something else. Do you think, I mean, I guess what I'm getting at is playoff wise, where do you think he's going to wind up if he's got maybe 10 days from that reevaluation period to game one of a first round series?
I hesitate to speculate. And I don't really want to put a definitive timetable on that because I don't know. And I don't think anybody really does know yet until we see where Carl is at in another 2 weeks from now and what that next update kind of is. So I hesitate to say, yeah, he'll be definitely ready for round one or, you know, definitely ready for round two, whatever it may be. We just don't know at this point. You know, the timetable would suggest that there is a possibility that he can ramp up and get ready for a first round series, but we just don't know if he's going to be on that 4 week timetable or if it is going to take longer for him to recover. We just don't have enough information yet. But stay tuned on that front. Hopefully we will in a few weeks.
What they've learned in this last, you know, couple weeks, obviously you want to have Cat, but if you have to be without him in the playoffs, or even if he's back, like, how do you feel like what we've seen influences any kind of, you know, the rotations they're going through or the style they're going to play or anything like that as they get into these, you know, once we get to the playoffs, and even we can talk a little bit about some of the big games they have coming up here that'll certainly be without him in a little bit.
Well, you know, I think it's interesting because in the playoffs, you tend to see teams shorten their rotations, right? Denver may only go seven deep in a playoff series, which is kind of what they did, I think, at times last year even. One of the strengths of this Wolves team has been their depth.
Yeah.
And when Carl's in the lineup, you have at least three bench guys there in Nikhil, Naz, and Kyle Anderson, who are probably going to play major minutes in a playoff series. I don't think there's going to be any shortening of a Wolves bench in a playoff series to seven, as long as if Cat is out there. Now, if he's not out there, then yes, that's possible. Where does Monte Morris fit in this mix? Where does Jordan McLaughlin fit in this mix as well? Because I think those two guys, at least right now, have been playing pretty well. And Monte Morris, I think, has fit in fairly seamlessly, now that he's kind of back up to speed following an injury riddled year so far. But I thought he's looked good, and I think he's kind of what they need in a playoff series as well. So I think the most intriguing thing that we're going to see come playoff time is just what Chris Finch does with these minutes, and how he doles them out with or without Karl-Anthony Towns in the lineup. I think there's decisions to be made and options across the board for him based on whatever the matchup is and what they may need in a particular game. I think it's one of the really encouraging things, I think, about the Wolves as you enter a playoff series, is I don't think there's too many teams that can match the depth that they have.
Yeah, I agree with that. And it's kind of funny. Like they've had a lot of, I wrote about this the other day, they've had a lot of side shows this year. Like they've had some injuries. We keep talking about what's going to happen in the future. They had the whole thing with Sachin and Gupta's hard drive. They have, the ownership thing is hanging over them. Even after all that, like I feel like not many people care about the side shows this year. It's kind of been, fans are just kind of like locked in on this is a really good team. How far can they go in the playoffs? And they're not really like dealing with the mess that they've usually seen from this team.
Well, here's the thing about the NBA and just covering it. That sort of stuff, the ownership situation, the hard drive story. I don't know that deep down the players that's really on their radar,
Sure.
or like it's like a bother to them as they go about their day. You know what I mean? I think that's a bigger deal sometimes, the attention that those stories brings for the organization as a whole, the
Sure.
people within it, and the fan base. I don't think the players really care all that much, to be quite honest, about that sort of stuff. They're just concerned about what they got to do today. What time are their workouts? They got to go to treatment. They got to do this. And as long as that routine, and then they have practice, right? And as long as that routine doesn't get disrupted for any sense or reason, then they go out and they play games. I think they're fine. So I just think the team as a whole, I think they're able to kind of channel whatever that external noise is out better than the fan base does, or, like I said, other parts of the organization maybe.
Part of that probably is Chris Finch. Are we undervaluing him still? Like there's, they've made the playoffs each of the last 2 years. They underachieved a little bit last year, I think, but a lot of that was injury. There's been grumbling like, Chris Finch, Chris Finch. And then this year, like they've been so good, even through some of these hiccups, even with injuries, things like that. Are we undervaluing Chris Finch at this point?
I thought the fan base fired him twice this season.
Yes, they did.
After that Atlanta game, and then after the San Antonio loss,
Right.
I thought he was supposed to have been fired.
Right. And he's, and he coached the All-Star game, in case we forgot.
I think that's an interesting thing, is just how do you properly value what an NBA coach does in the year 2024? What does a successful coach look like, and what does a bad coach look like? I think you saw with Milwaukee, they didn't quite, even with a good team, having a not so great coaching situation there. And players were confused. Players, were flummoxed by kind of what they were doing on the floor. Things weren't working. The coach was kind of, maybe a little stubborn in some ways. But I think what you see with Chris Finch is a willingness to listen to his players, to change, to have some ideas about how this is going to work, but to be collaborative with guys like Rudy Gobert and Mike Conley and Ant and Carl, and trying to tailor what the Wolves do to the best of his players' abilities and their skill sets. Chris Finch came into the league as a as an offensive, or made his reputation in the league as being a very good offensive coach, and he's currently coach of the number one defense in the NBA. And a average right now in terms of efficiency offense. But I think I also take the macro view when I think about Chris Finch's tenure here, and he has shepherded Anthony Edwards's development from, late in his rookie year to now, and it's been a steady ascension over
That's true.
four seasons so
Yeah.
far. He's figured out the puzzle of the three bigs
Yeah.
and how to get them to play together on both ends of the floor without Carl being and Naz Reid being defensive liabilities. They figured that out. We've seen Jaden McDaniels, even though he's been inconsistent offensively this year, I think he's still grown on Chris Finch's watch as well. And you've seen guys like Nickeil Alexander-Walker. You've seen Naz Reid really develop. Like, I don't know how much credit a head coach is supposed to get for developing young players into legit NBA starters and or rotation players, but I don't know that Wolves fans would necessarily want to mess with what the alternative could be for some of these guys. So,
No, I would. I mean, for sure. And I can tell you one thing: if those guys weren't developing, he'd be getting the blame. So maybe
100%.
we do need to give him some of the credit in that regard.
Royal Credit Union's smart checking accounts offer no monthly fees and no minimum balance. Enjoy financial freedom when you open your Royal Credit Union smart checking account online at rcu.org/gochecking. Insured by NCUA.
Really quick, the schedule going forward is interesting. Got 11 games left, starting with this Pistons game Wednesday night. Two against Denver, two against Phoenix, one against the Lakers. The rest of them are kind of like either, the rest of them look like they should be, winnable for a focused team. Not like they can't win those other games. They should win some of those other games too, but like, seeding doesn't mean a ton, but I'm sure they'd love to, get to the playoffs feeling good about themselves, get in there with a good, opportunity to at least have, I mean, they're certainly going to have, unless something catastrophic happens, at least one round of home court. I'm sure they'd love to have two. I'm sure they'd be thrilled with three. Starting to come around to your point of view that even though you're playing with fire, like Golden State might be your best playoff matchup at this point, just based on how they've handled them this year. They took Golden State's best shot the other day, and they still beat them. But how do you think they approach this kind of like two against Denver, especially? Like, what do you think that tells us about them down the stretch?
Yeah, it's so hard to think. I think for the Wolves the rest of the season, I think a reasonable goal is to finish as the two seed. I think Denver is playing at a really high level right now, and if you're the Wolves, you're missing one of your main players. I don't know
Yeah.
that you're going to be able to match them. You hope that when if you see them in the playoffs, and if Denver gets the one seed and the Wolves are 2 and 3, that wouldn't happen until the Western Conference
Right.
Finals. You just hope by that time that Carl would be really back up to speed and you're able to give them your best shot at that point in time. I think it's possible for them to pass Oklahoma City. And I think that should be an attainable goal that they could probably get the two seed, maybe get the two seed out of this last stretch here. And so that second round series against presumably the Thunder would be a Wolves home court advantage kind of series, which would also help our travel budget immensely if I don't have to go to Oklahoma City potentially three separate times in a playoff series. So I think if I'm them, I think a realistic thing to do is to, well, listen, they're only a game out of first or a game and a half out of first, but I think shooting for the two seed is a very realistic goal and would give you that extra round of home court advantage, in that second round, which I think would really help against a team like the Thunder, who's a very good team, but a young team.
Yeah, and they're what, 49-22 right now. If they had a blistering final stretch, they would finish with the best record in franchise history. But matching 58-24 will not be easy. That means you're only losing one more game or losing two if you're going to tie that. But yeah, I mean, almost certainly going to have the second best, at least the second best record in franchise history. You're going to have, home playoff for, the first time in 20 years. That's definitely attainable goals along the way. I like what you I like the way you framed it, because that feels like if Denver is the one, I mean, Oklahoma City is a really good team, but like that wouldn't be
a matchup that at least on experience would scare me if they got through the first round. You'd be like, okay, that feels like a fair fight. You got two teams, an up and comer. Wolves still kind of an up and comer, but they've been here a little bit longer. That feels like a fair fight. If you had to go against Denver against the second round, I know they match up okay with Denver. I still wouldn't love that because that's just a team that's kind of got locked in right now.
Yeah. Well, I think one thing that you saw in that game where the Wolves didn't have any other big guys available against the Nuggets was Denver's not a very deep team. And I go back to the point I made about the depth. The Wolves might have an advantage there in a playoff series and
wear them down a bit.
And I do think that Naz Reid would play a huge role in a Denver playoff series. I think he could really help in the minutes that Jokic doesn't play. And I really think that he would potentially feast in a matchup against the Nuggets. So I'm just very intrigued by that matchup overall, should it happen in the playoffs this year, because I think it'd be fascinating from a basketball standpoint. I think the Wolves feel, especially after a night where they almost pulled out a win, really shorthanded against a full strength Nuggets team on a back to back. I think they feel pretty confident that they have something on them.
Interesting.
We'll just see. Does Jokic kick it up even another level in the playoffs? Does Jamal Murray kick it up another level? Does Aaron Gordon kick it up another level from what they're doing now? I think they're going to have to compensate for their lack of depth this season. Whereas the Wolves can kind of come at them in waves a little bit. There's a number of ways the Wolves can figure out how they want to defend Jokic. You know, the Carl playing him, Rudy playing more of the lurker role. You know, can Kyle Anderson take him for a little while? Can Rudy take him one-on-one for a little while? Like, you know, the Wolves have a number of options to throw at Jokic that not a lot of teams do because of their depth. So it's a fascinating matchup. They got to get there first.
They do. And like we've talked about,
they got to win the first round first.
They haven't been out of the first round in 20 years. That's the only time they've ever been out of the first round. And there's not going to be a single easy matchup, no matter how they finish. I mean, it could be, you know, if they finish with the one, it could be the Lakers. It could be Golden State. If they finish in the 2-3 hole, it could be, you know, Sacramento, Dallas, Phoenix, like any of those teams. Like there's nobody easy in there. Nobody where you're like, bring me that team. I want to play that team right away.
that's right. There really is none. I guess maybe somehow, some way, if the Rockets were to sneak in and somehow get the 8 seed through the play-in, maybe you could squint and say, I don't know that they're for real.
Yeah, but, yeah, you know, right.
But
that would take you really think the league is going to let go of a Golden State Lakers?
Here we go with the conspiracy theories. I mean, listen, the league was one round away from having a Lakers Celtics finals last year and ended up with Denver and Miami. That to me is the ultimate proof that the NBA is not rigged, because the NBA would have loved to have had a Lakers Celtics finals with LeBron and it didn't get it. It got Denver Miami instead. So no, I don't think so.
I'll cling to my conspiracy theories. Thank you very much. But I think those two teams are better than Houston anyway. I think those are going to be your 9-10 anyway. But
I think so too. We'll but it's we'll close. See. But it is
close.
Right,
it's getting closer.
Now, so
it's getting closer. We'll Golden State's dropped some games and they're vulnerable. But we'll see how it all plays out. Chris Hine, I'm sure we'll talk again before the playoffs for sure. Enjoy your various viewings of the Carole King musical, and we'll talk to you again soon.
You got it. Thank you, Mike.
Good stuff from Chris. We can only hope for the sake of Wolves fans and Carole King fans everywhere that with Karl-Anthony Towns and his injury recovery this season, that it's not too late for him to come back in the playoffs. Let's finish with the cooler quickly. Gopher women's basketball team wins in the first round of the WNIT over Pacific. The big news in that is Mara Braun and Sophie Hart both back in the lineup for the Gophers. They're on minutes restrictions right now, but they are both playing. That's huge news for them, feeling again like they can kind of do the things they were doing before both those players were injured. They were trending towards being at least a bubble team in the NCAA conversation at that point before Braun hurt her ankle and Hart was injured a little bit later as well. So Good news for the Gophers. Now they're back at it again on Friday, I believe, against North Dakota State. Chance to get into, you know, deeper postseason run. Now, again, the WNIT is the third women's tournament this year, not the second. So it's a little bit of a lower level of competition, but still valuable, valuable time for them to be on the court, especially with those two players back as they try to regain momentum towards 2024, 2025. That will do it for me right now. Like I said, remember, Twins special episode will go live in just a few hours here, so pay attention for that. Come back and listen to that. And then Thursday, Ben Gessling will join me on the regular episode to talk Vikings, all he learned from the owners' meetings in Orlando. Until then, I am Michael Rand. Talk to you in a little bit.